Kayla Ferris, my average daughter, is in an AM September 4th, 2021 in Davis, Vermont. Members present are Representative Ortiz, Vice Chair, Representative Carr, and myself, Representative Zankowski, Chair. With the representative of the AM, we are taking back to business. For those in the room, please take this time to silence your cell phones for the duration of the meeting. Before I begin, I would like to thank the entire House Travel Affairs Secretary for Records, and I would like to thank you for the generality of the staff of the committee today. Today, we will be having a hearing on House Bill 94 by South Representative Zelensky relating to the Alaska Travel Welfare Compact. We will now briefly provide you with the Secretary of the Alaska Travel to Representative Ortiz and his staff that he confirmed at the presenter's table. Continued developing capacity and negotiated their initial extended scope of work. the continuance of work was briefly passed following the change in administration. Since then, however, tribes in the state have worked, have negotiated their differences out and come to an agreement on the previously expanded scopes of work, including initial diligent relative searches, ongoing relative searches, family contact, licensing assists, safety evaluations. Negotiations for the upcoming year should occur sometime this summer. Tribes are able to provide higher quality services much closer to home for children and at a lower cost in the state by leveraging on tribal resources and infrastructure. We'd just like to acknowledge the incredible work that we heard from tribal health organizations as an example of helping an existing program that has been able to benefit the state as a whole with respect to the COVID-19 pandemic, and the work of tribal health and compact is no different in context. Continued commitment to this contract will improve outcomes and will serve our young people and families in the foster care system. We also have heard previously in testimony that we expect the global child labor contract to also build public trust for families that are being inside the system. They're more likely, as we've heard from some of our tribal co-signers, to work with tribes that are helping to implement the tribal child labor contract. May not be as comfortable in working with state employees. The contract also strengthens the state services by engaging and empowering our most local governments. And for some, different parts of our state, as Ms. Barona has said previously, we think local government governs tribes. As we all know, the experiences children have during their forming years, and I know we've spoken previously about this in the Health and Social Services Committee. Is that children who experience adverse childhood experiences will have a disproportionate impact in their lives on the people who are to lead. They are classified as traumatic experiences that children may experience between the time that they are born and the time that they turn 17. Studies have indicated that adverse childhood experiences can lead to chronic health problems, mental illness, substance abuse in their life, and certainly increased incarceration rates. In recent years, there's a growing body of evidence about Black adverse childhood experiences in cities that have tied into a broad swath of adverse health conditions and behavioral issues. One point in particular that I would like to underscore is how costly adverse childhood experiences are. As I mentioned in my previous slide, with an increase in chronic health conditions, mental health challenges, substance abuse, and incarceration rates, it's clear that if we do not invest in healthy families and healthy children's early, we may be much more down the road, and we're seeing that with the behavioral health crisis that we're seeing in the state, substance abuse issues, and soaring incarceration rates. If you like very brief sexual analysis, and we are going to allow this for you to do sexual analysis. This is a one section bill amending AS 4400.05 that added a new section in Article 1, essentially requiring the state to participate in a tribal child welfare compact. I want to be clear, I know that I spoke about this in the previous committee on referral, but the intention behind the design of the language that we've included in this bill is meant to be broad and general as to not tie the hands of the state or to tie the hands of the tribes. Because negotiations occur annually, we do not want the administration to get in the way to dictate or be overly prescriptive into what was being put forward. Essentially, what we want to do is simply to protect the program. We know that the NEP administration has indicated its continued support of the program, and we want to make sure that this forward-thinking historic run-off agreement can continue in future administrations as well. So why House Bill 184? Right now, the Tribal Child Welfare Compact is an executive initiative under the Bennelly administration. The tribes and OCS have been very fortunate to have the support of both previous Governor Walker as well as Bennelly. But because it is not in statute, it adds significant ambiguity. This very brief, short bill provides co-senators with stability and predictability so that they can administer quality programs to vulnerable youth and families in the most remote parts of the state without having to worry about whether you can ethically continue to be around in the future. In our particular line of work, I know that we hear about our numbers and statistics, and while this generally can lead to good policy, it also provides distance between the decisions that we make and the consequential effects those decisions have on the families that we represent. And I believe that's one of the reasons why the compact and this bill are so exciting, is that we know that the impacts are strong, we know that the impacts are good, and that they will lead to quality outcomes. The Tribal Child Labor Compact is not just a positive step in the state's relationship with our tribal partners. It's an incredibly innovative and forward-looking policy that reaches kids and families in a meaningful way that we would not otherwise be able to do. So I just want to say thank you for the opportunity to present this morning. I'm happy to answer questions. I would love to have invited to stay on the line if you'd like to come to that. To invite testimony by Nicole Baronio, General Counsel for the Alaska Native, the Alaska Federation of Natives. I'd also like to note that we also have Director Kim Quay from the Office of Children's Services online to answer questions as needed. Ms. Baronio, are you with us?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Excellent, thank you. I'm getting a little bit of an echo, but sometimes it's also where the laptop resonating full time.
It's not good on our end.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Would you just like me to proceed then?
Yes, thank you. If you could begin by introducing yourself and your
update. Absolutely, thank you. Good morning, my name is Nicole Baronio. I have the privilege of serving as the Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Alaska Federation of Natives. I am a born and raised Alaskan and grew up at Ridge Point, where I went to high school down in southeastern North Dakota at my hometown. Graduated from the University of Alaska before I went on to work on health for a couple years for Senator Ted Stevens, and then went to the University of Washington School of Law, where I was very fortunate to study under Robert Anderson, who is now the president for me to be the solicitor for the Department of Interior, and we're expecting a very good working relationship with Bob once he is confirmed. But I'm just starting to talk about HB 484 and been to the committee a few times now this year, and I just want to thank the chair for moving this to have me appear before the committee and to talk about the Alaska Child Welfare Compact and its many benefits to the state of Alaska. This is a bill that the Alaska Federation Natives believes that the legislature can get behind in full force regardless of party affiliation. If you happen to be conservative-minded, you will like this bill because it stands to save the state millions of dollars over time if it's fully implemented. If you are more progressive, this is really an opportunity to join us on the cutting edge of land policy as we implement the first ever tribal state compact. What this bill will do is everything that the chair said during her opening statement, so I'll try not to repeat everything that she said, but I do want to is that this is really an extension of all of the good work that has been done over the last 5 years. This effort and this work has been in 2 administrations thus far. It has a lot of forward momentum. We've also been able to weather a pandemic, and we're still working to implement the child welfare contract for every corner of the state, even with the COVID challenges. The Office of Children's Services has undergone leadership changes in this time as well, and the leadership remains committed to the process, as do all of the tribes. And to give you one just brief example of the good work that's being done, sometimes the state has a difficult time identifying a child's family right away. Family can be hesitant to get involved when one of their family members has been taken into the state system because they don't want to upset their relatives. This is an area that the tribes, on the other hand, have been quite successful at. When the state sometimes has difficulty identifying who family members are, the placement preferences under the Indian Child Welfare Act, some tribal organizations and tribes that are co-signers to this contract have identified up to 70 different family members. And that just goes to show exactly what the chair said in her opening statement, which is that the goal of this is being achieved in that families are more comfortable in some instances speaking with their local tribe or their local tribal organization. And again, over time, this contract will save the state millions of dollars, particularly for the tribe's ability to draw down on 4E. Tribes that are not a part of that 4E program are exploring it as part of the contract that wouldn't be occurring without the contract. And we just want to have the opportunity to go forward and continue this work with the legislature's full support and to implement the contract in state statute so it is more stable and we can really fully implement everything that we've been doing over the last 5 years for the benefit of all Alaskans. Not just Alaska Native children, not just Alaska Native tribes, but Alaska Native children across the state. Thank you very much. I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're going to thank you for being with us this morning. Thank you for your open comments regarding HB 184. If you could, Ms. Romero, could you just summarize very as best you can by adopting 184, Hospital 184, what is the concrete takeaway or gain the state gets in relationship to the ownership? I mean, what my answer would have to say, what's the neat benefit of adopting HB 184 in relationship to the Alaska Native Trust Contract?
Thank you for the question, Representative. I'm sorry. Okay, I'm sorry, I thought you were done. It was a little bit of a lag. So I'll answer that question in general follow-up when we can talk to that next. But the net benefit is we're going to change the trajectory of children who are placed in the state system. And years down the line, they're going to be contributing members of society. We're going to pay a small amount of investment up front for long-term dividends that are paid in the coming years. And costs that would otherwise be dedicated to corrections or to other public assistance programs are going to be avoided. And overall, we're going to turn the corner on a lot more casual statistics that the chair was talking about. I know we can get your statistics quite frequently, but it's alarming when Alaska Natives make up 20% of the population and more than 60% of the kids in state custody. So we want to see that number go down as well. It should be more representative to our total population statewide. And thank you for the question.
Certainly a worthy goal and one that's worth shooting for sure. I guess what I'm still trying to understand, in 2017, the state of Alaska entered into the tribal child welfare contract. And so that went forward. 2017, what is it that has fallen short that has necessitated HB 184?
Thank you for that follow-up, Mr. Chair, Representative Ortiz. I wouldn't say necessarily that anything has fallen short since 2017, because, again, we have undergone a change in administration and a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic. So we are right on track in terms of successes at this point based on those two very high hurdles. But perhaps we're not as strong in our foundation as we would like to be, is that we don't have a firm anchor right now in state law for the contract. So it is very much at the will of an administration, whether or not the governor or a commissioner that comes in, whether believes in it and wants to continue the work that's been done. And what we saw in the change of administration between Governor Walker and President Dunleavy is what we've seen with past governors, which is that they want to take time to come up to speed on current policies and programs that are in place, and that included the Child Welfare Compact. But as a result, unfortunately, we lost essentially a good year of work early on in the compact. We were looking to cement that foundation. It became very horrible again. So with the legislature support and cementing the contract in state law, we will be able to release the collective side of both the tribal side and the state side and really get to work implementing. We don't have to spend as much time, hopefully, convincing state policymakers about the good work that we're doing or how important this is. We can essentially just get to doing more.
So it opens sunrise in relationship to legislative speed, I guess. When it was implemented in 2017, it was more like an agreement to begin regulation after the administration's they were going to implement this regulation. Now what you're saying is, I think, is that with the adoption of 184, it goes from being a regulation to a state statute. Is that correct?
Thank you for that analogy, Representative Ortiz, and through the chair. You know, I don't want to overcomplicate or alternatively oversynthesize the analogy, but I do believe that that's as close as we can get for a legislative state. Yes, this is an executive agreement, so it is very much like a regulation. And those are more easy to amend or to completely disrupt. And state law is harder to make that adjustment because it takes the will and the momentum of the Alaska state legislature. So, yes, in that simple analogy, that's exactly what we're trying to do there.
Thank you. And I just add, speaking as a sponsor of the bill, I think that there's been great strides and progress that Ms. Bromley mentioned under both the Walker administration and the Dunleavy administration, and the intention of putting it in statute is to protect that progress in future years. So, because the intention of the Tribal Child Welfare Compact is to really revolutionize the child welfare system to protect Alaska families and children. And by putting it in statute as implemented, it anchors the progress that has been made under both administrations for future administrations and future years. Representative Tom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Ms. President. Thank you for the presentation. And a couple of things I just wanted to ask about. The Chair talked about how this language was written to be broad in general because of the annual negotiations. And it sort of reminds me of, you know, these open conversations with the PFD. You know, if you put in the Constitution, you know, what level of specificity to use of how prescriptive to be. I'm just thinking, okay, so what would happen here is, you know, there's a shell here, and so, you know, there'd always be an ending of a compact, the Alaska Tribal Child Welfare Compact, but, you know, within that, I guess, sort of, I can see where you'd want to put this by in general language, as the chair mentioned, but is there anything that gives you pause about, you know, not having said houses, is there anything we would want to think of to be careful about that, you know, we would want to have some sort of conversation about one issue, for example, that has come up, and this has come up when I've heard conversations about tribal compact and gratification, is, you know, some people might look at it as this opportunity to try to cross shifting. Oh, okay, now this responsibility has been shifted. But that doesn't mean that the need for that funding goes away, right? If you're looking sort of, you may have that responsibility, you know, funding needs to travel with that responsibility to fully, you know, implement or administer whatever program. And so, I just, you know, so I'm trying to think if there are any details of the tribal child welfare compact that we would, you know, would want to be any more prescriptive about, or, you know, make sure that that component would always be included. And I'm just thinking from your legal mind, you know, there's often, you know, that kind of sort of maneuvering can happen. And so I'm just wondering if you've thought about that and what gives you comfort with that language.
Thank you, Representative Troy. And through the chair, a very brief answer to that is no, we are not at this time. We would like to see the bill adopted in full discussion. We do not want perfection to be the enemy of good. And again, we are trying to get all members of the legislature as comfortable as possible before we're doing, before we really take the dots and eat on the bones to the statute. One of the quite frank, most, what we see valuable benefits to this for the members that are perhaps new to the legislature this season or haven't heard about tribal compacting is that we're not asking for a dollar amount to be taxed. And this isn't a sneaky way of giving a state appropriation. However, there is a separate request pending for a one-time appropriation to the tribal child welfare contract because we do need to make an investment in this if we're going to go forward. But no, at this time, this bill is exactly what we need it to be. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate that a lot. And just a sort of separate question. From my personal experience, living in a lot of interaction with the child welfare systems, I'm not really a fan of the current model. I don't think it's serving our children or families well, and in a lot of cases, causing more harm. And you have to question whether, you know, the circumstances the child was in are actually worse than the circumstances that they're up in by going into custody because of multiple family situations they end up in. You know, the kids come to the house, you have to be able to be like a dozen persons or 2 dozen persons, and their lack of stability and connection is just being so damaging for kids. So, I guess I'm just wondering what opportunities will you have, and I don't know if these, I think this is part of the annual negotiations for innovation, to sort of like upend the current system that we know is not working. Does that happen through that negotiation process? You know, I'm just wondering if you have thought about, you know, sort of what other models, earlier intervention, more family supports, I don't know, just what other models could work better than what we're doing now.
Thank you very much for that representative talking to the chair. That's exactly what we're trying to accomplish through that compact, is we want to do something different. Unfortunately, you have sometimes when you are on the cutting edge of that policy, inevitably you end up falling into what's comfortable and what's been done before. And we have settled there a bit, but what we're trying to do here, even under this administration, and what I think Deputy Commissioner Clinton Massey and the Acting Income Director can write for this, is that they're starting to really hear what the tribes have been saying for the last couple of years, which is that they want to focus on prevention. And they want to focus also on whatever wraparound services the tribes have through their other divisions and departments, and not spend so much time on intervention, because it's not good enough that we throw a child a life vest once they've already fallen into the river. The tribes and the tribal organizations want to make sure that your children have life vests on and the dangers of fast moving water and to stay away from the river. So that's really the goal and what we're trying to do through this compact. The tricky thing about that, really, though, quite frankly, is that a lot of the money especially on the federal side, is tied into foster care, and that means that there's been some intervention and a removal. So we have to, as a state, think about other creative ways to fund the compact, even if there's not a federal grant out on this. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Any other questions from committee members? I would just like to note for the record that I overlooked providing a further back the legislation as written does carry zero fiscal notes. So there's no fiscal impact. I actually have no further.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Who were the 18 co-signers? And I know I'd like to see who was the original 18 co-signers.
Did you have that?
Thank you, Representative for the Chair. The 18 co-signers are all of the 12 regional nonprofits, with the exception of CANA over in Cognac. So all 12. The tribal consortium and regional nonprofits are co-signers to the compact. And then we do have a handful of individual tribes as well. Kodaitse, Yak, Kodiak, Klinkin Tribal, which is a regional tribe, State Park, they're all co-signers as well.
Thank you, Andrew. And of course, we're not going to be listening to you. You had a key word in the stop meeting, it's prevention. You know, I grew up in a village. I think the bigger issue is how do we fix what's broken? You know, how do we fix the drug abuse, the sexual abuse, the alcohol abuse, neglect? And I appreciate the prevention there because in order to fix the problem, we have to identify the problem and then begin working on it. So I just want to say thank you for having that word in there because I believe that's key to making progress. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bologna, for being here this morning and in person providing testimony. Please feel free to stay on the line if any additional questions come forward.
Mr. Will, thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, we will now open up the bill for public testimony. I have not seen anyone who has looked over my phone, is that correct? Okay. Seeing no individuals online wishing to testify, no one in the room, no one in the staff. I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony. We have had no amendments submitted to our office. Are there any other points of discussion on this bill? Right. Seeing none, I would entertain a motion to the bill from the committee.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 94-LS-0722-I. With individual recommendations that attach zero response.
Are there any objections? Seeing and hearing none, House Bill 94 passes in committee. We will assign the committee paperwork upon agenda. The time is 8:35 p.m., and this year the House Tribal Affairs Committee is now adjourned.